Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link, live from Bonn in Germany. I am Abubakar Jallo. Coming up in the next 25 minutes, it's International Albinism Awareness Day. But what does this mean for people living with a skin condition?
Days like this can be used by the government to come up with programs or new approaches in order to ensure that persons with albinism are getting their voices heard louder.
And Ugandan authorities ban all public venues showing the Euro 2016 football tournament, citing security concerns. Pub owners are wary about the decision.
I have no problem with what the police is saying, but they want us to buy some security equipment that are so expensive.
Plus, another segment of the drama series Crime Fighters. Stay tuned.
Top story.
How much do you know about albinism? Well, that's what the International Albinism Awareness Day is about. Albinism is a genetic condition where people are born without the usual pigment or color in their bodies. Their bodies aren't able to make a normal amount of melanin, the chemical that is responsible for eye, skin, and hair color. But many people in the African continent know very little about the condition and often mistreat people living with it. As Moki Kinteka reports from Cameroon, some cultures there advocate for the killing of people with albinism.
Like many other African countries, albinism is associated with various myths influenced by superstition over time. Eugene Yaya, a 24-year-old university student, says he grew up hearing lots of stories about albinos.
It's known that albinos do not die, that they disappear. And it is also said that they don't eat certain type of foods. They are on diet. They don't eat, for instance, palm oil and things like that. What we know is that they are highly segregated. They are not part of the regular society, that sunburn affects them.
Others like Nzerem Godlove, who hails from the southwest region of Cameroon, says people with albinism are sacrificed to appease the gods so that they don't bring about calamities.
They do sacrifice to the gods of the mountain to appease the gods, especially when it comes to the issue of the earthquake, earth tremor. If they don't go appease the god, then there's no way. And the only thing that they can do is to sacrifice an albino.
One of the common myths about albinism is that they bring good luck. Nje Richard, who is married to a person with albinism, believes that they are a source of good luck and bring marital fulfillment to their spouses.
If you happen to fall in love, that means if you are a man, you happen to fall in love with an albino who is a female. Know that you have good luck. If you were a poor man, you become a rich person. If you were having problems maybe at the job site anyway, you know that luck will fall on you. So that is why having an albino is blessing.
So how does one fight such myths and strong beliefs about albinism? Divine Afuba, a doctor who specializes on people with this genetic condition, says it is important to inform people that they are human beings like others.
Albinos are normal people who have just suffered a conflict of, you know, the outcome of genetic mismatch.
Moki Kinteka compiled that report. Tanzania, which has one of the highest numbers of people living with albinism and where many still live in fear of being targeted for ritual killings, made history after an albino became a government minister. First a lawyer and then a university professor, Dr. Abdallah Saleh Possi was appointed as Tanzania's deputy minister in the Prime Minister's office, responsible for, among others, employment and people with physical disabilities. My colleague Jane Ayuku Kumet has been speaking to him about the meaning of International Albinism Awareness Day.
It's an awareness day to bring international awareness to the condition of albinism. This is just because of marginalization. We have several specific days dedicated to children, to women, and the common history among albinism, women, children, is that history of marginalization. So to me, this is an awareness day. And for that reason, days like this can be used by the government to come up with programs or new approaches in order to ensure that persons with albinism are getting their voices heard louder.
You are the first minister with this condition in your country.
Deputy, yeah.
Have conditions in your country got better or worse over the last 12 months?
I would say better if I compare that with what had happened in the past about the killings, about the attacks. Although I know for sure that we still need to work hard as far as stigma is concerned, because stigma is not something which we erase just in 1 or 2 years. You can take an example of issues related to race, issues related to gender. People who had always believed that some races, some genders are inferior are still existing to date, despite a lot of international approaches to end such kinds of thinking.
Is tougher legislation needed to protect the people with albinism?
Well, as a lawyer, then I would ask, which kind of tougher legislation? You already have a death penalty here under our criminal statutes. And it will be funny if you say, if you murder a person with albinism, you will suffer death, while you all know that if you murder any person, you will suffer death. So as far as the law is concerned, much of it remains with implementation and much of it remains with awareness. We already have people who are on death row, if I might say, because the highest court of the land, the Court of Appeal, refused to quash their convictions. So the law is fine, but even if you hang people today and you have not educated the people, tomorrow another person will come with the same belief. The most sustainable thing is to erase this belief.
In your opinion, does the media help break prejudice or does it actually reinforce it?
Well, I have mixed view of the media. I know that media can be a very powerful tool in eradicating prejudices, but sometimes I have a problem with the media myself. For example, I remember an incident where persons with albinism fought one day, and on the media, what we had on the newspaper is that albinos fight in front of the State House. And I remember to have asked a person, if brown people or very tall people fight, will you just write tall people fight? So there is still a problem in the media. It could be a personal problem, maybe it could be because of understanding. There is still that approach like persons with albinism are very different. They are not very normal. So the question whether media has or has not been very helpful is pretty tricky. And I don't want to be academic in that, but I still believe that media can help in erasing stigma, and especially when media portrays a person with albinism as a person who should benefit from equal rights.
Tanzania lawyer and Deputy State Minister Dr. Abdallah Saleh Possi.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Football fever has gripped Europe as the Euro 2016 continues in France. But in Uganda, fears of terrorist attack like the 2010 bombing, which killed more than 70 people, have led to authorities to ban all pubs that usually show the games in public places. Alex Chita has been out and about in the capital Kampala to find out how Ugandans reacted to the ban.
This is a typical weekend in Kampala as people watch the Euro Cup 2016. Most of these matches are shown in bars as the proprietors target football-loving Ugandans to make some extra money. With Europe's soccer tournament going on, bar and club owners had hoped to seize the opportunity to stage concerts to publicly screen more matches, especially the final of the Euro 2016. But the Ugandan police decided to ban such concerts. However, they allowed screening in small bars with limited people. Fred Enanga, the Ugandan police spokesperson, says they have ordered the regional police commanders, or RPCs for short, to vigorously monitor the security setup at these places.
We've asked the RPCs to ensure that their basic safety measures, very clear inspection, assessment of these venues, and to ensure that there is a specific number that is accessing the venue. Overcrowding and so on can bring about security lapses. Venues below standard in terms of security and safety should not be allowed to watch or promote football.
The beefed up security during public viewing of football matches is because only last month the Ugandan High Court sentenced 7 people who were convicted for the terror attacks in July 2010. More than 70 people were killed while watching the World Cup final between Spain and Netherlands. Somali's Al-Shabaab militants later claimed responsibility. For Kampala-based pub owner Barbara Kobusinje, the police ban is like two sides of a coin. Though she understands the need for security, business is likely to be affected.
As a bar owner, I have no problem with what the police is saying, but they want us to buy some security equipments that are so expensive. But every day, we ensure our clients are safe because this is our business.
Ugandans were somehow split on the ban, with some saying it was good and others saying their rights were being denied.
The decision by the police is a violation of human rights because we as Ugandans have a right and we are free in our country. For some of us feel happy when we are with others, now being at home, we will be just like in prison.
It is the work of security to see that they have to protect people, not that a big screen has any effect with someone.
As a Ugandan, I would appreciate Ugandans again not shedding tears like the way they did the previous time. It's okay with me because I felt the pain the first time, though I wasn't affected, but it's obvious. So it's better. Everyone can watch it from his or her own house, those who can afford. If you cannot afford, you'll just hear in papers.
That report was compiled by Alex Chita. Let's cross over now to Kenya, where the Monday's demonstrations organized by the opposition coalition CORD have been cancelled. Efforts by the ruling coalition Jubilee and religious leaders to settle the crisis over the Electoral Commission have so far not been successful. James Shimayula has been speaking to my colleague Crispin Mwakideu about the highly politically charged issue.
They are not taking place this time, unlike in the past when they have taken place on Mondays. The reason is that the opposition feels it has to give the government time to look into their request to have a dialogue or a meeting. The cancellation of the demonstrations that were expected to be held today, Monday, came shortly after James Orengo, one of the opposition leaders, announced that they have given time to the government, at least 2 days, to respond to their request to have a quick meeting of both sides so that they can see if they are to remove the IEBC, that is the Electoral Commission.
And James, what does the government think of these new demands by the opposition?
The government is still sticking to its guns to the extent that it wants the constitution to be followed as Manoa Espisu, spokesman for President Kenyatta, attests in his address to the press conference here in Nairobi.
Clearly, there are people who have always wanted to do things outside the constitution. That is what Kenyans decided overwhelmingly against in 2010. It is a right to demonstrate for every individual. They can picket for whatever reason. The constitution lays out an important condition in terms of demonstrations that they must be peaceful.
Manoa Espisu, spokesman for President Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya.
What do Kenyans make of this political deadlock?
What ordinary Kenyans want, and I've spoken to many of them, they want both sides to stick to what religious leaders said. Sit down, agree on the mode of removing the Electoral Commission. So the consensus here is that ordinary Kenyans don't want to see ugly incidents of deaths or destruction or thieving by gangsters that normally mingle with the protesters, especially at the time when we are marching towards the 2017 presidential and parliamentary elections.
James Shimayula in Nairobi. Thousands of people seek to make the dangerous crossings over the Mediterranean to Europe, and Learning by Air has been shedding light on the topic. Here is a repeat of Destination Europe. Enjoy.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is a brand new 15-episode radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. People have always migrated in search of a better life. Lately, it seems hardly a day passes without news of the arrival on European shores of hundreds of illegal migrants from Africa and other regions. These people risk everything, including their own lives, to get to what they believe is the Promised Land.
But it's not only illegal migrants who are making their way to Europe. Some, of course, go to live there legally. But what is it that makes Africans to leave their continent? And what awaits them in Europe? For the answers of these questions and much more besides, stick with us and listen to our first episode called Dreams of a Sweet Tomorrow. You'll meet four young people from different parts of Africa. Chivasi and Linda live in a country somewhere south of Sahara. These two have been friends since they were children. Now they are mature adults in a committed relationship, and they've just graduated from university. Chivasi wants to settle down, but Linda's parents have other plans. How will Chivasi and Linda deal with this? Listen on as the young couple meet in a cafe in town.
Linda, what's on your mind? You seem to be lost in thought.
Chivasi, I don't know how to tell you this news.
Is it good news or bad news? It sounds so serious. Relax, my dear. We just finished our studies and we got good results. Shouldn't have a problem finding one.
I'm going abroad.
Linda, what did you just say?
Chivasi, calm down. I'm going to Europe to continue my studies.
No, Linda. You can't do that to me, to us. Please, don't go abroad. You can study right here at home.
It's already been decided, Chivasi. I can't go against my parents' wishes. They're convinced that studying in Europe will give me a better chance on the job market.
But what about me? I love you, Linda. Am I supposed to put all that behind me and just forget you?
Chivasi, how can you even say such a thing? I'm not going for good. It's only 3 years.
What?
And you know how much I want to be with you. You
three
know.
3 years? Linda, 3 years would kill me.
Chivasi, stop being so negative. Come on. Okay, look. This will be good for both of us, for our future. And besides, we can always Facebook and chat online. It'll be like I'm right there with you. The time will go so fast, and before you know it, I'll be right back here with you.
But how can I be sure? Unless...
Unless what?
Unless you promise me that you'll marry me when you return.
Chivasi, it's not fair to ask me to make a promise like that.
If you truly love me like you say you do, Linda, then promise me this. Only then will I be able to stand you being away for so long.
Chivasi, I can't. I'm sorry, it's just asking too much of me. Everybody's expecting too much of me.
Hey, Linda. Linda! Linda, where are you going? Linda! Come back, Linda! Linda!
This is a dilemma faced by some African people every day. Should I leave my country, my wife or husband, and my whole way of life for a life I know nothing about in a foreign world? The truth is that, while some choose to stay, many do choose to go. So what will Linda do after storming out of her lunch date with Chivasi? Stay tuned to find out. But now, let's travel to North Africa, where we'll meet Farahani, a young man whose parents passed away, leaving him an orphan. With him is his friend Sule, a young North African man who comes from a family of local fishermen. Both of them are unemployed, and they have just one thing on their minds, Europe.
Farahani, huh? What are you thinking?
Never mind. It's not important.
Sure it is. You've been very quiet lately. What is it?
Sule, sometimes I just sit and wonder. When will we ever find peace in our country? The violence, the hatred, the reprisals. I lost my parents because of it. Sule, I'm so sick of it all. Come on, let's go down to
the show.
Yes.
Again. Farahani, I know how much you enjoy fantasizing about Europe. I do too. But here is where our lives are.
No. There is no life here. Europe is where people really live.
What? We have no life here. Are you dead, Farahani? You know, for someone who's dead, you look pretty alive to me.
Sule, we are not dead. But we are not living either. We are just surviving.
Surviving?
Yes. Every day here is a fight for survival. But from what I've heard, life in Europe is 100 times better. The future there is brighter than the sun over our heads. If you can make it to Europe, life really becomes life. Let's go down to the show and watch the lights of Europe, man.
You and your European lights. Okay, then let's go.
Sule, one of these fine days, I'll cross over to the other side. And then I'll really start living.
This is what Farahani, Sule, and many other young Africans dream of, migrating to Europe. Is it wrong for them to dream and hope? Judge for yourself as our story continues to unfold. Later that same evening, at Linda's house, Mr. and Mrs. Maraga can't contain their joy.
Thank you, Linda. Now, tell me, have you talked to Shivazi about you going to study in Europe?
Oh, yes, I was wondering the same thing. You two had lunch together today, didn't you?
Mom, how did you know? Are you following us?
Yes, on Facebook. It's there for all of us to see. Shivazi's last status proudly announced. Do not disturb on a lunch date with my one and only.
This crazy generation. They just can't keep their private thoughts private.
This isn't fair.
Linda, what is it?
In sending me away, are you stopping to think about what I'm leaving behind?
Yes, nothing. There's nothing left here in our country. Just poverty, misery and despair.
Mama Linda, let us give our daughter time to explain herself.
Okay.
Dad, Mom, I know that you two want the best for me and I really do appreciate that. But my going abroad has already complicated things for me and Shivazi.
In what way, Linda? Did he threaten to leave you after you told him the good news?
That's a problem, Dad. This is good news to you, but not to everyone. Shivazi didn't threaten to leave me. He asked me to marry him.
Oh, typical African man.
Mama Linda, don't forget that I'm an African man too. I know that times have changed. That's why I want to see Linda pursue her career as a lawyer. Linda, your mother and I aren't doing this to try and tear you away from Shivazi. We simply want you to have a better life than we do. We know very well that this is only possible if you go to Europe. There you'll get the best education from the best tutors. You'll study with the best students and...
But I could carry on studying here. Why send me off to that cold continent, Dad? 3 years away from Shivazi? Yes, I might come home with a new law degree, but I might lose the only man I've ever known and loved, ever since I was a child. Is it really worth it?
Linda, your father and I have gone to great lengths to see to it that you study abroad. We've spent every bit of our savings to pay for your education. For you to compare that with the relationship with... What's his name again? Shivazi?
He's not
it's
just
not just
Shivazi.
Ungrateful. It's very disrespectful too.
Your mother is right, Linda. There aren't enough opportunities here at home. But if you study hard and do well, everything changes. The jobs will come to you. There will be plenty of opportunities and a lot of money to go with them. Besides, who knows? Maybe you like it over there.
Yeah.
Think. Your whole life is before you, my daughter.
Please.
But what about Shivazi? He asked me to promise that I'll marry him when I come back. What should I do?
Okay. Tell him you'll give him an answer when you come back. And he should not put that on Facebook.
What is it with you kids and this Facebook? Linda, you're an adult now. Please try to think and act like one.
But Dad...
No, please, Linda, please. Just do this for us.
With those fatherly words from Mr. Maraga, we end our first episode of this new special edition of Learning by Ear on the subject of migration to Europe. What will Linda decide to do about Shivazi? And what awaits her in Europe, where she is to continue her law studies? And don't forget Farahani, our friend in North Africa. Will he take the risk and make the crossing? You'll find out all this and much more in our second episode. And please join us in our online discussion forum as we tackle this question. Is it true that there are no prospects of a bright future for young people in Africa? Send us your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. Until next time, goodbye.
And before we leave you, a quick reminder of the top story. It's International Albinism Awareness Day, and we've been highlighting the plight of albinos in the continent. An update now. In South Africa, a court session is due today to sentence Olympic sprinter Oscar Pistorius for the murder of his girlfriend, River Steenkamp. An appeals court had overturned the initial conviction of manslaughter. That's all we had time for. For more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. I am Abubakar Jalo Mbon. Bye now.